that same year, I did the Rio Challenge, which was also a crazy experience. I ran a half marathon on Saturday and the full marathon on Sunday. I ran in 3:28 to qualify for Boston again. So after Boston that year, it was just on a roll of incredible achievements and memories. Welcome, Endurance Enthusiasts. I'm your host, Bruna.
And I'm your host, Fabi. You're tuning into Human Endurance, the podcast where we aim to inspire you with stories of achievement, motivation, and self-fulfillment.
We'll connect you with humans pushing boundaries, breaking barriers, and discovering the joy of endurance sports.
Join us on this journey of self-reflection and personal growth. Let's go the distance together.
Today, we have a special episode with Bruna, the co-host of Human Endurance, and my wife. Bruna is originally from Brazil, but has lived a big part of her life in the US and now in Europe. Bruna works as a data and analytics manager at Fastnet, which is a scale-up that builds fast charging stations for EVs. She's also a running coach on the side. Since 2021, she has helped over 40 athletes to complete half marathons and marathons. Bruna herself has ran 8 marathons, 1 ultra marathons, and has done 2 70.3 Ironmans. Her PB, personal best, in the 5K is 18 minutes and 57 seconds, and in the marathon, her PB is an impressive 3 hour 14. Wow. She has competed in the famous Boston Marathon as well, and is now attempting to break the magical 3 hour barrier in the marathon. Welcome to Human Endurance, Bruna.
Thank you, Fabi. I'm so excited to be on the other side of the equation today and be interviewed. Looking forward.
Same, excited to dive a bit deeper also into one of the co-hosts of the podcast.
Yeah.
So let's jump right into it. I mean, I obviously know all of your story, but I want to really share with the listeners a bit of your background, because you grew up playing tennis quite competitively and then you turned into running in your 20s. Can you elaborate a bit on your background in tennis and then how eventually you decided to move into endurance sports?
So tennis was a huge part of my life when I was growing up. I played super competitively from ages 11 until 20, more or less. I was recruited when I was 11 in my local club, let's say, in my hometown. I've always been very good at sports in general, and I think I just ended up being in the right place at the right time for tennis, was recruited for that, and I always enjoyed winning and competing. And I ended up being pretty good at it. It was super intense for most of my childhood. I was training 3 hours a day. I would travel every month for tournaments around Brazil. When I was older, I lived in the States for 1 year at a tennis academy, IMG, which it was founded by one of the most famous tennis coaches of all times, Nick Bollettieri. And well, let's say that sports has always been a huge part of my life, and also competing. I was recruited to play tennis at university, so that's how I ended up going to university in the US, being from Brazil. The thing is, I enjoyed tennis up until a certain age. I think at that point in time, I was already a bit burned out. It was super stressful growing up playing tennis. I wasn't the most emotionally mature player. I really got very upset when I didn't do well, and I think that had a really big weight on how long I could do that for. So when I arrived at the US, I wasn't really in love with tennis anymore. And that's how I kind of got into running. So Pedro Pinguim, who we've had on the podcast already, he was a good friend of mine in Brazil, and he was the one that introduced me to endurance sports. I trained for my first half marathon with him kind of by my side on every single training, which was really cool. But then I left for the US. So this was really right before I left. And so when I was in the US, I was already way more into endurance than I was into tennis. So what ended up happening was actually pretty funny. I played tennis for 1 year at the university, at Emory University in Atlanta. But I wasn't happy, and my coach could tell that I wasn't at my best. And she knew that I liked to run, so she suggested me to try out for the cross-country team because you have different seasons. So cross-country is a sport that you do in the fall, and tennis is a sport that you do mostly in spring. So she recommended me, Bruna, why don't you take a break from tennis? You can try and walk onto the team. You can do that from, in the fall, which was like September to December. And then you come back to tennis when you're ready in January. And maybe that's the break that you need. I ended up doing that. I tried out for the cross-country team. I ended up getting into the team and I never went back to tennis. So when springtime came, I decided to do track. So I kind of never played tennis at a high level again. In the last 10 years, I think I played tennis probably 15 times. So it was a real burnout, and I found my true passion with running.
That's a very interesting story, how the switch happened. Also that you really never went back to playing tennis from basically 100 to almost zero. Can you elaborate a bit when you first started running with Bingbing? So he took you on a run, and how was the feeling? Did you immediately fall in love with it? It's very different from tennis. I mean, tennis is a game. You play against an opponent, versus running, you're by yourself. You're also mostly racing against yourself unless you're a professional. So how was that for you in the beginning? How did it feel?
I think the fact that running is mostly a sport that you play with yourself was probably a big part of why I enjoyed it so much. It was such a big contrasting difference to tennis. But I fell in love from the first run I ever did. What I realized is that I was a tennis player that tried to drag on my matches as much as I could, because we used to win if I pushed the matches a little longer. So I think I've always had this endurance in me, which is probably a bit of genetics. But I think with that, once I started running, I already had a pretty solid base, and I enjoyed doing sports for a really long time. So I remember the first few runs I went with Pinguin, I just felt like I could go on forever. It was such an amazing feeling to just have your mind relax and be able to enjoy the moment way more than with tennis. I think tennis requires a certain type of focus, which I think has been very important in my life, something I learned really early on. But running is more relaxing. It's more of a moving meditation, I think, than tennis in itself. Tennis feels to me like I'm at war with my opponent, while running is more like I'm in peace with myself.
And then you entered your first race was already a 21K, right? You didn't even do the 10K, 5K.
Yes, correct.
So how was that? Did you train a lot for it? How did that feel? Because, I mean, I remember my first 21K and it was hard. So how was it for you?
I won my age group.
Oh my God.
For my first race ever, which was a surprise, to be honest. But no, it didn't feel too hard. I think I had such a strong base from coming from tennis and having done sports my whole life. But I also trained very well for it, because at that time, Pinguin was training for a marathon, which was on the same date. So it was the real half marathon that I did, and he was training for the real full marathon. So I basically just tagged along with him, and he had his own training program. I just did more or less similar things, usually a little bit less long runs, right? I obviously didn't have to do all the training. And I always did it with him. So I got to learn fast a bit of the tricks of the mind, and also how to feel and how to actually think about a race. He was the one that taught me like, you should try to keep your pace as steady as possible, because that reduces the amount of energy that you spend. You know, I feel like I managed to avoid a lot of the rookie mistakes by being with somebody who was more experienced. So I only have amazing, like the most incredible memories from this race. It was a beautiful day. I was running by the beach of Rio, like that. They changed the course now, but at that time it was basically just by the beach the whole way. And I remember feeling extremely emotional, like just enjoying the whole way and having this feeling of I can go on forever. It was incredible. Although I have to say, when I did cross the finish line for 21K, at that time, I could not imagine running a marathon. So it was still a pretty daunting distance.
Okay. Yeah, you saw it felt hard, at least in the end.
Yes. It did. It did feel hard. I remember thinking, wow, I don't know how people actually run double.
So you did your first 21K run, and then you elaborated already that in college, you then changed to running track. How was this time in the cross-country team? And maybe for listeners who are not aware what cross-country is, can you also elaborate a bit what the distances are, how this training looks like? Because I know in the US, sports is at the college is very different than in Europe. So it's very competitive. You train a lot. How was this time for you? And also with the group you trained with?
This time was incredible. I finally got to have a super strong community of runners around me, all girls, which I never had before, right? I basically just ran with Pinguin before, which was just super enjoyable. And about cross country in itself. So cross country is basically off-road races. So you're not running on asphalt and you're not running on the track. It can be hilly, it can be on grass, etc. I think it is usually on grass, actually. I think it's usually on grass and it's 5K. But that training, that period of time taught me so much about how to actually train. Because before that, I had followed Pinguin's training plan, so I didn't really know anything else. And during that time, we had a head coach. We actually had training plans put together for everybody. And so I started to really understand how you actually build endurance training. It was intense, but compared to what I did for tennis, it didn't feel as intense because for tennis, you can practice for many hours a day. I think our practice at that time was 4 hours every day. I think we had one day off, and running, you don't run for 3 hours every day. You know, we had one long run, but in terms of time commitment, it was so much more chill than tennis that it felt like just pure fun.
And you were also competing there in the 5K races, right?
Yes, I was also competing.
Is that where you got your PB in the 5K?
So almost. I remember that season I was trying to break 20 minutes in the 5K for a super long time. I've always been very good at running far, but not necessarily running super fast. And during that season, I ran a 20:01 on the 5K. But my PB 1857 was a few months later on the track. Track is a little bit easier.
It's faster too, yeah.
Yes.
And can you translate that into pace? How fast did you run your fastest 5K?
1857 is probably a 3:50 pace.
3:50, well,
yeah.
Fast.
Yeah, it's fast. I was not at the top of the sport. So I think comparatively, I was a way better tennis player than I was a runner. So I was, you know, average in my team. But for me, that was a great achievement. Like all the girls there had been running for their entire lives and I did a sports switch. I was very proud of that time.
Especially considering the fact that you haven't been running your whole life, going to this team and still performing that well is incredible.
Yeah.
Because normal people start with way slower paces. I speak from experience. So you ran more shorter distance in college. What then made you go to the longer distance? Because you could have also stayed at the shorter distances afterwards.
The long stuff always was what attracted me. I always actually felt like the 5K was too short. Like I said, I'm not the fastest, but I've always have been very good at running for a long time and keeping my pace very comfortably. So I always knew I would do marathons after college. That's actually what I did. I was still in college, but I ran my first marathon in 2016. That was only 2 years after I joined the team.
And how was the marathon that you chose? The first one is a special one.
It was so cool. I had spent that summer doing a course at Berkeley. I think that was how I chose to go to San Francisco. So to put it into context, the spring before that marathon was my last season competing at Emory because I switched university. So I knew that my running career, at least collegiate career, was over. So it was that summer that I decided, okay, I'm going to do a marathon. And because I was in Berkeley, I thought, why not do San Francisco? It was going to coincide. And San Francisco is obviously super beautiful. And I had a friend that had been doing the half, I think, every year. And she actually encouraged me. She was like, Bruna, why don't you come with me? I remember staying in the hotel with her and her mom. And I just went with them and ran the race. I remember training for it. I was basically just asking Pinguin what I should do, because at that time I still didn't know too much about endurance training. I trained a lot in the little mountains, well, hills in the Berkeley region. So I did a lot of training in trails. I remember going out and running for 3 hours, not really caring like how fast I would run. And that was my training. I wasn't really doing intervals at the time. I was just trying to get some volume in. And I think it worked out pretty well because I had been doing speed work for the previous year. So it ended up fine. And I ran my first marathon in 3 hours 44. I didn't think about time at all, but I think that was a very decent first marathon.
And how was this experience crossing the finish line of the first marathon? Because some people say also when they finish their first race, they're like, never again. Some people are like, this is the best thing I've ever done. How was it for you?
The best thing I've ever done. Not surprising. It was extremely emotional. I cried. I remember, like, if I close my eyes, I can be back in that moment of, especially the last kilometer when I realized I'm so close. And I remember the emotions and, you know, in the last kilometer of a race, the crowd always starts to get bigger and you start hearing the noise from everybody. And then your heart is just like, oh my God, I'm actually doing this. It's you can't, like, that's one of the things I live for.
Let's move on to your training approach. Do you yourself also have a coach, or you train yourself?
I have a coach since last November. So it's very recent. Up until November, I always trained myself. Even for my best time, 3 hours 14, I was always coaching myself. But I realized after I decided that I wanted to break 3 hours, that why not? It would be, could only help to work with somebody that could bring more knowledge into training. And so I started to work with Elish McCogan, who is the 10K British record holder. She's a very experienced runner. I think she's been to the Olympics and stuff, and she's a girl. So I thought that would be awesome, because that's something that, you know, like in any sport, it's sadly predominantly coached by men. And I think there are particularities about being a girl that only women can understand. Like, training has to be a little bit different, right? We are not built the same. We cannot handle the same amount of stress. So yeah, I was super excited to start working with her. Unfortunately, I've had a few accidents, actually two little accidents from November until now that have prevented me from actually working with her. Like, we haven't been able to put out a training plan that, yeah, we've been excited about, or personally I haven't been too excited about, because I hurt my foot and then I hurt my knee.
Yeah, but I assume once you're back in full health, you're probably gonna go back and continue to work.
Yeah, I will definitely continue to work with her. I think there's still so much more that I can learn from her. So that's the plan.
Let's still go to your training for the marathon. What kind of training approach do you follow with your coach? And also, do you train by pace, by heart rate? Do you do speed sessions? Do you do long runs? Of course, I assume, but can you elaborate a bit on how your training looks like?
I'm going to speak of the training I've done for myself, because like I said, I haven't been able to fully work with Eilish. So I'll speak more of what I do for my athletes. I think I can add more value there. So the approach that I take is I break down training cycles into 4 weeks. I increase training volume progressively towards your target race. And then after every 4 weeks, you have a week that is a bit lower. So you can imagine like it's a graph slowly going linearly up for 4 weeks, and then it goes sharply down for the first week of the next cycle. So you have time to recover. Let's say it has a certain cadence to it. I prescribe to my athletes training by few, by heart rate, and by pace. I think having all the three kinds of runs are very important. By few is actually how I built most of my training. So I think it's extremely important that you go out and run just as well as you want and how you actually feel like doing it that day. I feel like it helps athletes to connect to their body, which I find a very important part of endurance training. Training by heart rate is about working on your endurance system. It's mostly so my athletes don't run too fast all the time, which I think is one of the most common mistakes that athletes will do. They think that every single run is like a race or that they have to perform. Sometimes maybe they're too worried about Strava or whatever and how they're going to show up for other people. So heart rate is, you know, I just ask them to run on zone 2 heart rate, which is pretty slow. And I have them then build volume without building too much stress. And then my pace is mostly when we do interval sessions. So it can be like a low range from anything like VO2 max sessions, which are intervals of like 6 to 8 minutes, all out speed, to threshold sessions, which are more like sustained efforts for about 20 minutes. And that just depends where you are on your training cycle. But the idea is that you get to train different zones pretty often so that you can grow holistically as an athlete. But of course, you spend way more time in the endurance zones, which are slower pace, because, well, you can't really handle to be running fast all the time. So I also follow a bit of the 80-20 approach, which is most of your training is on your zone 2, zone 3, and then 20% of it is faster.
Like the polarized approach. And how many times per week are you doing speed sessions? How do your long runs look like?
I usually do once a week speed session. I know there are some athletes more experienced that do twice a week. But for me, I'm not really there. I cannot really handle more than once a week speed sessions. So I do 4 to 5 times a week running. I do once a week speed session, 2 or 3 easy runs, and 1 long run. In my long run, I always use as a workout as well. So it's often not just go out and run easy, but you obviously have blocks of running easy, but you have some blocks also of intensity, of race pace, so that you can use all that volume to fit in some different adaptations and get more fit for your race.
Mm-hmm. And what does easy mean for you?
My chill runs, I would be running at 5:15 pace. That is very easy. That's the pace that allows me to recover super well for the next training session.
And there's different approaches to volume as well. Some people run around 100K per week. Some only run 70K per week, even what I hear from professionals. There's huge differences. And what approach do you have in terms of running volume per week?
My philosophy is trying to run as little as possible. And what I mean by this is I don't think training volume is everything. Increasing training volume comes with a big increase in risk of injury. So I try to prescribe as little as I possibly can, which will still create adaptation. So I think I'm a pretty risk-averse coach in that sense. I would rather see my athletes crossing the finish line rather than trying to prescribe too much and seeing them getting injured. That's what I try to avoid at all costs. So I think there's no magical number. It really depends on each person. This is super unique. Like you said, there are people running 100Ks a week that will run 3:15 marathon, and I've done that with running 40K a week on average, you know? So I think it's just super personal. Although I think to break 3 hours, I have to increase my training volume a little bit. I would like to see my mileage go up to around 60 kilometers.
Well, it's very little.
I guess it depends on your perspective and your comparison. But yeah, it's perhaps little for a marathon runner.
But I mean, if you can reach your goals with little running, it's amazing. But then I guess if you have a lower volume, you'd also will have to do more harder, like the sessions in general would have to be harder, right?
Not necessarily. You still keep the same proportion. I just cannot handle the same amount of volume that other athletes can, or at least I haven't yet.
Okay. Yeah, it's hard to ramp up to this mileage of 100.
It's very difficult, yeah.
It's hard, yeah. So you mentioned several times you're coaching people, runners as well, and you've been doing this for the past 3 years. What were some common mistakes that you've seen from your athletes that maybe might be interesting for listeners to hear?
Number one mistake, running too fast. If the run is supposed to be easy, it's supposed to be really easy. Like I said, I think everybody thinks that they need to be racing every time that they go out. That's not the case at all. So that's the number one mistake. I think I can end there.
Yeah, personally, I needed time to learn that, because I remember I had a coach, not the one I have now, previous one for triathlon, and he put very slow runs for me, like 6 pace. And I was so confused because I was like, oh, he has no idea how fast I can run. Why should I run 6 pace?
Yeah.
So I think it's sometimes not just maybe an ego thing, but more of like you don't understand when you don't know the science behind it and the approach.
Yeah.
So now I'm more experienced and I know the purpose, and I got injured too a couple of times by just always pushing, and now running slow, I also try to appreciate those runs as, like you said, recovery runs. So definitely a common mistake. Also, I think in races, my first half marathon, I remember I was starting kilometer one and I was feeling so good, obviously. And I was like, oh my God, I can hold this pace. I feel so good. And then kilometer 6, it was already hurting. So this is, I think, a mistake everybody makes.
Yeah.
I don't know if you also have this experience.
Yeah. Yeah, that rings a bell. I think, like, I coach my athletes for race day. So I think I really hammer down on the point of don't go out too fast. So I don't think I've seen any of my athletes make huge mistakes in the beginning, but that's definitely something that beginners will do for sure. Like if you taper correctly, which is really that period right before the race that you should rest, you will show up to the starting line feeling amazing. If you have no sense of what you can hold, you're not very experienced, you don't know how the distance is, very easy to just sprint out and then break. You see this in races all the time, right? There are some people that you see that start and then you never see them for, I don't know, an hour and a half, and then suddenly you're catching up with them and you're like, oh, that guy, yeah, they went out too fast, I saw them.
Yeah, another mistake, which I also did, so I want to ask you if you also have done that or experienced it from your athletes, is the mistake of racing with somebody. Like I kind of was just like focusing, oh, this person, I'm kind of running with this person. I was not trying to compete, but more of like keeping that pace as well, which also is not a good idea. Have you also experienced that?
I've always approached running as a super individual thing. Even if I have a goal and there is a pace team, I never run with the pace
team. With the pacers?
Yeah, with the pacers with the little flag saying the time. I don't know why, it just feels like, no, I want to do this on my own. Like, I have my own race, but... So, yeah, it's not something I've done, luckily.
Okay, good. I can also not advise it. And then... coming from mistakes to success stories, because we don't want to only talk about the mistakes. Can you share some stories of improvement that you've seen from your athletes where you were really like, oh my God, this person improved so much?
Yes, actually, I have two athletes that come from a similar background, meaning zero running, like no experience at all. And they both reached out to me. They're two girls and they both reached out to me just wanting to be more energized, and they wanted to do more sports in their routine. And I convinced them, hey, the only way to really do this is by signing up for a race, which is, by the way, what I always recommend to my athletes. But anyways, these two believed in me and they decided, okay, I'm gonna sign up. And I've seen both of them in like a year go from zero running to half marathon and go from paces of like 7 minutes per kilometer to 5:30. And one of them is now talking about signing up for a marathon next year. And they're both super hooked. And they tell me how happy they are with this new hobby and how much it adds to their life on their day-to-day, how much more energy they have and how accomplished they feel, you know, all the good things about running. So these two athletes make me extremely proud, and they both have very demanding jobs. I know that one of them travels a lot for work. She still manages to get her training done. I know the other one is studying full-time and working full-time. And she's the one that's signing up for a marathon. Not necessarily the easiest schedule to handle, but they manage it. And yeah, it's extremely fulfilling to work with them.
I can imagine. Let's move on from training to how you manage to have your job as a data analytics manager to your side job, having your running coaching business, to also balancing your own passion, which is running. How do you manage to do that also with your partner, with me, and your friends, your social circle? How you manage to make this all work?
I think for me, since I grew up with sports as part of my day-to-day since I'm super young, I think I learned to have this structure very early on and to really split my time between working out and doing other stuff. So I don't see running as a competing priority with work, for example. I see this as pretty complementary. The periods when I'm injured is when I feel least energized and I do worse in my job. I think they go hand in hand, and running gives me not only the endorphin boost in the morning, but also the confidence boost, like having this feeling that I'm progressing in running and that I, like when I manage to run my races and do really well, like that is something that brings so much confidence to my life that it really makes me a better professional. A few of the tricks that I have to manage work, running, and a social life is I'm also very strategic with when I pick my races. So I will not pick races by fall, at least not usually, because during the summer, I know there are way more social things going on, like I want to go to festivals and I want to enjoy with my friends and I want to hang out in the sun. And I don't want to have to make these difficult choices all the time of I'm not going to see my friends when I really feel like it and the weather is amazing versus I need to go on a run today and I cannot really drink or do something more fun. So I usually pick my races in spring because I train through winter and I absolutely love that. I actually love running in the cold. And I love the feeling of still moving and being super sporty and feeling like I'm using my body while it's still cold outside. That's like on the high level plan, but in the more like detailed plan, I also choose to do my runs in strategic days. So if there's a birthday, I'm not gonna plan to do the run the next day. That's just stupid. That's gonna make me sad because I'm gonna feel like I can't be there and enjoy the birthday. So I do my run in that morning, you know, which maybe is not so good for my recovery. But for me, if it is a priority to be present at that moment and be on my social setting, I will do it. I think that, yeah, probably takes a little bit of my potential to be an even better runner, but I'm okay with that trade-off. Running is not everything in my life.
And also for work, I guess you can always find the time to go on your runs.
I try to run in the morning. Just everything is easier, right? Even if I need to put in extra hours in the afternoon, it's not a problem. I'm not going to have this feeling of like, I should be on my run right now. You know, if I do it in the morning, then the job is done. I feel accomplished. I feel ready. I feel energized. So that's a strategy that I use as well.
And how is it with your system around your friends? I mean, myself, how do you feel you're supported from your surroundings?
Of course, you're the best. I mean, starting with you, I'm so grateful that we share this passion. I think it goes both ways, right? I understand your training, you understand mine. Not only understand, but encourage, support. And this is essential. I cannot imagine having a partner that is not supportive of that, of this passion. Of course, it takes time from your day to day, but by having somebody like you by my side, it makes everything so much easier. And I have to say that also, I've always felt encouraged to do sports in my life. So if I think of my younger days, the support I've gotten from my parents has been crucial. I always felt like I was encouraged to take on high-level participation in sports. They supported me when, you know, I couldn't devote all my time to studying or whatever, and they never saw that as a problem. And I think this has set up my mindset in a way that I also don't see this as a problem, you know, because I can imagine if you grew up in a different environment where, I don't know, sports is seen as a waste of time or, yeah, just something I hear sometimes. I completely don't agree with it, but I never had that. So I have a very positive outlook on what sports can bring. And I think that has shaped how I see the world now.
For sure. I think it's also important that the people around you support you and you feel supported, and it's not seen as a negative thing that you're doing or like a sacrifice you're doing. In the end, it's an addition to, to your life that improves your life quality, right?
Yeah, I'm lucky that I guess I've managed to surround myself with people that really support me. And even I would dare to say that I've managed to encourage so many people around me to get into sports. So it really feels like extremely fulfilling hobby, not just from the point of view that I get to do it, but that I also encourage others around me to do it. And I know how positive it is for everybody's just life and mental health and just feeling of connection with their own bodies. That is, it just makes the pleasure of running for me even bigger.
I think it's often overlooked that, of course, it has the physical benefit, but then the mental, and it helps you so much to succeed in other areas of life. For me also, you know, the goal setting, the improving, it translates also to work, to even the relationships and all kinds of parts of the life which you can transfer your achievements in sports.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you cannot underestimate the impact on your mental well-being. I think like the health and fitness side of it is only one side of the coin. I'm not even sure if it's the bigger, to be honest.
For sure.
Yeah, like it's a big part for sure. Like your body feels healthy, you feel strong, you feel fast. I think that this feeling is really great, but I mean, it's hard to say that it's bigger than the confidence you get by setting goals and going for them and achieving them and being able to see how input becomes output. I think this is a very powerful thing to realize, that what you put in will actually come out. You know, I think it shapes your mindset in a certain kind of way that's very powerful.
Yeah, and I think this, especially maybe tying back to tennis, applies more to endurance sports, because in tennis, I think if you put in a lot of work, it can still be that you lose. So it's not such a direct consequence of the input, output, right?
So. Yes, that's absolutely correct. Tennis is unfortunately more frustrating than running in that sense. You can be training amazingly well and you're not necessarily going to win. There are so many other variables at play. I think that's one of the magical things about running, in the way it's a little bit more straightforward. Not always, but more than tennis, definitely.
I agree. I mean, you can have bad days, but most surely you'll have a good result if you put in the work.
Yes, I agree.
So we talked now about the mindset and how your mind is involved, engaged in endurance sports. And what kind of strategies do you have when you train, but also when you race? Because a marathon is hard. You're going at your maximum for a long time and you have to push your mind as well. Do you have some strategies that you maybe do in training that you apply for racing? Also on race day, do you have some strategies that you apply to give you this confidence that you can achieve your goal?
Yeah, I do actually. So You know, I think that's something I realized when I was still doing cross country, which is that I know there's always this point in a race when you are faced with a decision of, now it starts to hurt. Do I keep going or do I slow down?
When is that normally in the race?
It just depends. It depends on the day. It just depends on the day. But there is always this moment. Like, there's always this tiny moment where you realize, now is the time I make the decision. Am I going to get my PB or am I not? And realizing that, I always try to envision this moment, especially the night before my race. Sometimes during the training, but specifically the night before the race, I will lay down in my bed and I will envision this moment. I try to picture my surroundings and the specific race that I'm doing and the weather they expect for the next day and where I might be at that point in time. I really envision it. And I envision that I take the right decision, which is to keep going, obviously, and to keep going at my pace. And I find that extremely powerful, because then the next day, when I am faced with that decision, I feel like I've been there before and I feel like stronger to make the right decision, because it's almost like I have taken that decision already. And of course, there were moments that it didn't work, but I think in general it has worked. I have very little races that I feel like I completely flunked, you know, and didn't do what I wanted to do. Usually when I'm half injured, then yeah, this is more difficult, then I usually don't even envision it. I just hope that I will enjoy the race and not feel pain, you know. But I think that that has made my mindset for racing very strong.
I can imagine. For me, it's also, I feel like I really in training practice my mind, because you do have intervals and there it also hurts, right? So getting your sessions done every training gives you also this confidence of, I did it in training, I can do it in the race. I don't know how you feel about that.
That's a good one. For sure, race pace intervals are very powerful for that same reason. Like, you can feel them during your training and picture the race. That's actually something I do as well. But, you know, I'm experienced enough to realize that a lot of times race pace in training will feel so much harder than on race day, for the fact that during your trainings, you're also tired from all of the training. Like, the race day is the day that you're going to be most fit and most rested. I have the maturity to realize that even when race pace feels very hard during my training, that I know that that's just part of it. And that's actually something that I try to pass on to my athletes, because a lot of them don't believe that they can run a certain pace for the race. And I think that comes from the difficulty that they feel during training. And I try to pass that on to them. But I also realize, I think that can only come from experience and really feeling it and realizing that, wow, I can actually keep this pace for forever because I'm rested and I trained well.
And has there been a race that you can remember where you were really struggling mentally, where you were really like, this is very hard and I don't know how to overcome this moment?
The last marathon I did, I think it was the hardest mentally for me. It was Zurich last year, 2023. I was struggling with an injury on my foot, and I knew it was likely not going to be a great day, but I still didn't want to give up in my mind. So even though knowing that I would likely not get the goal that I wanted, I decided, and I think it was a mistake, to still go out at the pace that I would need to go out at to get my goal. And that turned out to be just a mistake. I broke very much. I was slowed down significantly, like 30 seconds per kilometer after a half marathon. And I knew it wasn't going to be a PB. I knew that it wasn't going to be my goal. And that was very tough mentally to keep going, because everything hurt and it was not going to be this incredible race, you know. It was also difficult because you were there and we had all these friends also at the sidelines waiting for me, and it was just difficult to keep going. You know, I imagined that day so differently. Like, you always imagine that you're going to pass by your friends and you're going to be like, yes, I'm doing it. And that was just not the case, right? I think I passed by 10 minutes after I told you guys that I would be there, and that was difficult. I'm proud that I finished because it definitely crossed my mind to just walk and give up. But we don't do that.
Yeah, I remember that race because I was waiting with some friends and we were like confused because I've just seen you on most other races achieving what you wanted. And I was like, where is she? She must have passed. And then you came and then I knew it was not what you envisioned. But I mean, regardless, like every race is still an amazing race because you learn also from things when it doesn't go how you want. So I think it was still such a great achievement on the time that you made it as well.
Yeah, it was still my second best time.
Exactly.
So I shouldn't be complaining too much. But I think that race, what I take from it is to be more honest with myself when things are not going so well with training and just, you know, realize that, okay, like if the training didn't go well, let's change the plan for the race because the likelihood that it will work out is so low and you rather just have a race that you're gonna enjoy than a race that you start way too fast and end significantly slower. That's always very frustrating.
I think that's a good takeaway. Let's move on to nutrition and recovery. Do you have a specific diet that you follow? I mean, you were vegan for 4 years.
Yes.
And now you changed your diet a bit again, eating fish. How important is diet for you for training? Do you still eat whatever you want or are you really particular?
I take nutrition very seriously. I think it's one of the levers that you can use to increase your performance and make things significantly easier. So I read a lot about nutrition. I try to get as much information as I can. I don't specifically follow a training plan at the moment. It doesn't go very well for me to have a very strict diet with everything kind of written down what I should do. I just know that that's like way too much like effort for my mind to do that. So I try to eat freely. But there are some fundamentals that I follow, which is I don't eat ultra processed foods at all. So I cut that all from my diet. And for the listeners who don't know, ultra processed foods are unfortunately a lot of the things in the supermarket. It's anything with additives and sulfites, with emulsifiers, all the stuff that you look in the back and you're like, what is this? It's not a real ingredient. So yeah, all of those I cut out. Of course, if I eat out, I cannot control that. But when I am buying stuff, that's something that I've decided to cut out. And besides that, I try to eat very clean. My favorite snacks are pears, cashews, and Greek yogurt. I'm in a really big Greek yogurt phase right now, which is very funny because being vegan for so long, I didn't eat any dairy for forever. But now I just feel like I have to eat it every day, sometimes twice a day. It's almost like a craving.
I know, your Greek yogurt is sacred for you. And do you drink alcohol?
I do, yes. I don't drink often on my day-to-day, but yeah, I like to enjoy life and to lose control sometimes and to drink. So yeah, I do it.
So it's possible to drink once in a while and have very good performances.
Yes, it's absolutely possible. Just be smart about when you do it. Don't do it like the day after your longest run or the day of your longest run because you're not going to recover very well, you know? But strategically chosen, those days are completely fine.
Cool. I want to move on to some of your races and the race highlights. I want to talk about your Boston Marathon in 2019, where you finished in an incredible time of 3:39. But what maybe listeners don't know is that you were injured the weeks before. You didn't run really how you should have for training and still achieved to have this amazing time. Can you elaborate a bit about how it was to run this special iconic marathon with an injury?
First of all, this finishing time was a complete surprise. Like when I show up for the starting line, I didn't know how far I would make it really, because I had been out, I think, for 3 months and I had a very bad hip injury. I was on crutches for forever and I ran one time, 1 hour, 1 week before the race. I didn't feel pain and I was like, you know what, fuck it, I'm gonna do the race because this is my dream race and I'm just gonna go. I remember being at the starting line thinking to myself, I am crazy. Like, I have no idea how I'm gonna feel. I don't know if my hip is gonna break in half in the middle. I don't know, like, yeah, how this is gonna feel. And Boston is supposed to be a very difficult marathon because the first half is mostly downhill and then suddenly you have rolling hills. So for your legs, it's just like complete chaos. So this is an incredible day for me. I went like wearing my heart on my sleeve, not really knowing what was gonna happen. I'm just so grateful that I could finish. And of course, having you at the finish line was extremely emotional. And I was just so grateful to be able to run again. And after that, I went on a roll and actually did that same year, I think it was 3 months later, I did the Rio Challenge, which was also a crazy experience. I ran a half marathon on Saturday and the full marathon on Sunday. And of course we did the half together and the marathon the next day. I mean, that was just, I also didn't know how exactly I would feel because even though like the half marathon, we controlled the pace very much, it wasn't fast. It was still an unknown to be able to run a marathon after that. And I ran in 3:28 to qualify for Boston again. So after that Boston that year, it was just on a roll of incredible achievements and memories. And it was also, of course, very cool to run the Rio half again, because as I said, that was my first race ever. So
true.
It was just amazing kind of coming everything full circle, being there and doing the marathon the next day.
Yeah, I remember this race so beautiful. For anybody who ever plans to do a very beautiful race along the coast, Rio is it's insane because you're in such an iconic city.
The only challenge there is the weather because it's so hot. I think we start at 5 a.m. So it's really like, whew, you're burning, you're melting at some point, even though you start that early.
Moving on to the North Face Endurance Challenge, which was the ultra that you did. It was 54 kilometers and it was 2,000 meters of elevation. And you finished in 7:01. And I was being there as a support crew, giving you sandwiches and food. Mm-hmm. And it's a different kind of racing than road marathon. So how was that running in the San Francisco, California hills, doing such a special race?
Trail running is a different sport. Like, you can't even compare. The paces are completely different. How your body feels is completely different. I feel like it's more of a mind sport than anything, because you're out there for so long and there's so many ups and downs. I mean, 7 hours, come on, like that's enough time for you to feel like a superhero and feel like the complete worst that you've ever felt. But it was an incredible experience. I had been wanting to do a ultra for quite some time and I just felt attracted to being in the trails and experiencing that and seeing how far I could push. I remember a few of the moments of the race. Like, I think the race started with very much an uphill, but it was super early in the morning. And I remember kind of walking up this hill and not being able to see the top of it because there was clouds, you know, kind of this vibe of like sunrise and thinking, oh my God, this is just so beautiful. It was super cool. I think the trail running community is also very special. It's very much about camaraderie and being there for each other. And so people always talk to each other. They check in, see how you're doing, share experiences. It's a little bit more social than road racing. I mean, of course, road racing, you don't really have the ability to talk because you're pushing. And with trail running, you're pushing, but you can still talk because a lot of times you're going up the hills, you know, and you get to like strike these conversations with people who are doing this as well. And it's a very cool experience. It was very emotional to cross the San Francisco Bridge. So the race started on the other side of the bridge, which is obviously very hilly, all the trails, and finished with the Golden Gate, which I had run before with two of my marathons, my first and my second one in San Francisco. So I was there again after climbing 2,000 meters and running for that long. It was just incredible. It was a beautiful day. It was sunny. I remember feeling absolutely destroyed when I crossed the finish line. I think I dare to say it was the hardest event I've ever done, but I definitely want to go back to trails again. So I think once I break 3 hours on the road running marathons, I'm going to go back to trails and try to run a little bit longer and enjoy that side of the sport.
Now let's go to your PB race, which was Paris 2022. And you did 3:14, which is insanely fast. How was that race for you? It's also an iconic race running through the city of Paris. How did it feel?
Paris was the perfect race. I felt incredible from the start to the end. When there was this moment that I faced of, am I gonna push or am I gonna slow down? It was an easy answer. I was going to push. I felt very strong. I think training went very well in that cycle. I had no nagging injuries. I felt extremely strong. I started doing strength training more seriously like 1 year prior. So I think I was just in a better overall fitness level and was able to push a little longer. And the cool thing about that race was that it was after the corona break. So I hadn't done a marathon in 2 years, I think, before I went to the starting line. And I remember thinking, oh my God, like, did I forget how this is going to be? Like, did I put a crazy goal for myself? Because my best time before had been 3:21. And I suddenly decided that I wanted to run 3:15, which is a substantial difference. But I was just super happy that everything worked out. It was a very cold day. I think the starting, like at the starting line was 0 degrees. You were there. I remember like wearing arm sleeves and a jacket above and gloves and ear warmers. And I was a bit concerned about how that would feel. But I guess in the end, it's better for your body because you don't heat up as fast. But it just, everything worked. It was one of those days that I hope I can reach again. I haven't had such a good date since, but it was just a wonderful experience.
For sure you can. It's also a huge race, like watching you there. And I remember we didn't decide where we're going to meet after the race. It was just two of us.
That was stupid.
And that was kind of a beginner mistake. So, and I think the race has maybe 20,000 of participants.
I think 40,000.
Or 40,000, just a huge number. And we didn't even say, hey, after the race, we meet there. You obviously didn't bring your phone. And I was like, oh my God, it's cold. Bruna just ran a marathon. She must be heat up, but cooling down very quickly. And we couldn't find each other.
And the thing is that I'm so bad with directions, right? So even though the finish line was close to the hotel, I just obviously got lost. Thankfully, it was a good race. And I mean, I had pain walking, but it was doable. But yeah, finally I made it to the hotel, I guess. I remember asking people for some directions, trying to crank out some French, which I don't speak at all.
I think you even called me with some person's
phone. I called you, so I know your number by heart. I know you don't know mine, but if you were lost, well, you don't get lost, so there's no problem.
Yeah, that was a cool race to watch as well. We're coming towards the end, which is the time also to ask for advice that you have for people that are wanting to get into running and don't know how. What kind of advice can you give to them?
My number one advice is sign up for a race. I think that's the only way to really push yourself to do it. So I would do that as step one. And then step two, try to find a community that supports you. Try to look for a friend that maybe will want to do this race with you. And if not, look for a local running group. Just look for people that will encourage you and give you this motivation to show up. And then the third step that I would give is look for a coach. Like, endurance running is, I mean, it's not rocket science, but it's very easy to make mistakes and get injured, and you can avoid that very much by having a coach that can just guide you throughout the process. And I think what happens a lot of times is athletes will start with a coach and then they learn enough and they don't need a coach anymore, you know? But for the beginning, it's certainly something that is absolutely worth it.
I think those are very good advices for beginners. So we're going to finish up with some fire questions.
Let's go.
That I have for you. Are you ready?
I'm ready. give me hard questions.
Okay, running in the morning or evening?
That's easy, morning.
Long run or speed work?
Oof. Can I pick both?
No.
Long run.
Run on an empty stomach or after breakfast?
Empty stomach.
With or without music?
With.
Favorite race?
Boston.
Favorite training shoes?
Brooks Ghost.
Favorite racing shoes?
Nike Vaporfly.
Thank you so much, Bruna, for joining us, the guest today from the other side. It was really interesting, and I'm sure the listeners were happy to get a glimpse into your history and your motivation and you as a person, as a runner.
Yeah, of course. It's so amazing to be on my own podcast. But yeah, talking about sports is something I absolutely love to do. I'm so glad that we are doing this and we're bringing human endurance to the world. And I hope that somebody would have learned something from what I said today and that I got to inspire somebody. So yeah, looking forward to the next episodes that we put out.
Yeah, I have no doubt that somebody will get inspired by this episode with you.
So. Thank you so much for tuning in to Human Endurance today. We hope you have enjoyed this episode and felt inspired by my story. If you like the show, don't forget to rate it and hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening to it. This helps us to reach a bigger audience and get other humans to hear the inspiring stories we have to share. In fact, if you know of someone who is also listening to my story, go ahead and share this episode with them. It would mean a lot to me. Thank you and see you next time.